Pickaxe.
If you like to eat stress-free and healthy, like me, you can do it this spring with Factor. They have delicious, ready-to-eat meals, everyone is fresh, never frozen, and chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options, including popular ones such as Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or like me, vegan and veggie. There are more than 60 add-ons you can discover every week, such as breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. If you're looking for gourmet options, there are meals that have premium ingredients, such as filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini and asparagus. And they are no fuss, no mess. Factor eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking and cleaning up. Simply heat and enjoy the good stuff. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can pause or reschedule deliveries at any time. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. This month, we're celebrating Earth Day. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So head on over to factormeals.com/pickaxe50 and you can use code PICKAXE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your second box. That's PICKAXE50 at factormeals.com/PICKAXE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is going. Check it out.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Boom! Welcome back to the Triforce Podcast, everyone. Boom. Oh, it's lovely. Ow. Thank you for joining
Jeez.
Us. Thank you.
Kazam!
Right off the back of a big talk about pooping last week.
Yeah,
that
we
was
need to
nice.
Stay clear on that. That's it's a rabbit hole we don't need to revisit.
No, it's true. Yeah, it's true.
It's what's it called? It's a groundhog. It's a little cresting groundhog. We don't want to, you know, look into. It's a hole, a brown hole. So we don't need to be anywhere near.
We don't need to go near it. Did you guys hear that beavers have been reintroduced to the UK? Did you know?
Really?
Yeah.
But
in 2014.
When were they banned from the UK?
They it was when the poll tax came in the 80s. They refused to pay
right.
the poll tax
right.
for their houses.
They eat poles, of course, or use them for their dams. So
taking advantage of council dams.
Exactly. So Margaret Thatcher booted them all out, and then so in 2014 in Devon. Some beavers just fucking rocked up. They just turned up. Nobody knows where they came from.
Right.
And they were like, we got to get these American beavers out of here. And some conservationist lads were like, these are European beavers, so they're chill. And they were like, oh, okay. And they went and chatted to the farmers, and the farmers were like, you know, this is going to cause problems. Because when they dam up a river, it leads to like less drainage for the fields nearby, and it floods and all the rest of it. But there are also benefits. In drought conditions, the water table isn't as badly affected because there's all this water hanging about in the beaver dams, and they stop flooding from rivers and stuff like that. Like some good, some bad. Interestingly, the farmer union was like, we need an exit strategy for these beavers. And everybody else is like, I don't know. I like the idea of having beavers running around in the country. I'd love to see beavers building a dam in Britain.
I like that the beavers are hanging out on the River Otter.
Yes,
which is very
the River Otter.
Conveniently named.
Well, you say that, but I suspect a coming war between the otters and the beavers. The otters will be, it'll be like the Falklands, you know.
Benefits of beavers. Well, let's see. Beavers and the landscapes, they generate benefit, both people and life and wildlife, because they help to reduce downstream flooding. Mm-hmm. The channels, dams, and wetland habitats that beavers create hold back water and release it more slowly after heavy rain. They increase water retention. They clean water. Wow.
Yep. It gets filtered by their dams. It goes through the topsoil and they sort of filter about a bunch of impurities out.
Beavers in Britain. The Eurasian beaver, Castor fiber, is a large herbivore. A mammal that was formerly native to these shores and once played an important part in our landscape from prehistoric times until it was hunted to extinction in the 16th century for its fur, meat, and scent glands. Oh, my God. What do you do with a beaver scent gland, exactly?
Rub it on yourself, and women find you irresistible, as long as they live in a river.
They're kind of cute, aren't they, beavers?
They
are. I'm just looking at one right now. They are very, very big rodents, but they look really cute. This one's a bunch of nipples, looks like. The bottom.
Can you stop talking about beavers and nipples? It's too early.
They're big nipples, though, I bet you.
It's really it's doing
something
to me.
I like nipples and I like beavers.
You could probably draw a lot of milk from those bad boys. Like
good
they
Lord.
Are
beaver milk.
They're looking good.
All right, which animal would you rather drink the milk of? Would you rather drink dog milk? Cat milk or beaver milk? What's it going to be?
Oh, man, none of those milks.
You've got to drink one.
Why do I have to drink one?
Or they're going to kill you.
I'd rather die.
You'd rather die?
Yeah, it would, yeah.
Yeah. That's the old Sips answer to those.
Just kill me. That's fine.
Yeah.
The fourth option is the punishment option. I'll
come
take
on,
that.
Though, guys. Think about it. How are you going to get through the rest of your life knowing that you've drunk milk from the teat of a foreign animal that
you have no business drinking
from the teat of.
You don't have to suckle. All right. I'm not asking you to go up and suckle.
Oh, okay. That's
the
different
cow.
Then. Sorry. I thought you meant like I had to naturally go and draw milk right out of its
No, they're going
to
produce it
breast.
For you in a glass, chilled it at your request.
Right.
You just got to neck it. Which is it going to be? For me, it's never going to be cat milk.
Well,
it's
in that case, I don't give a fuck. Just give me the milk and give me the money and we're done.
Yeah.
I
sent you that gourmet box
There's
of
gotta be some payoff
chocolate milkshakes last week, Sips. There was like three different flavors. Do you remember?
Gourmet chocolate
and
milks.
I sent you that little set and you said they were all scrumptious. Well, actually, that was cat milk, dog milk, and beaver milk. You've been drinking it the whole time.
Oh, my God.
You didn't even realize.
What about rat milk? Would you drink rat milk?
I don't think you'd fucking be able to tell. I don't think these things probably taste particularly nasty.
No.
You know, I don't think that milk is this thing that they want their babies to drink it and not like, it's not like lemon juice, is it? Do you know what I mean?
All right, here's one for you. Cockroach milk.
I mean, is that even a thing?
Yes, that is a thing.
Even make
that
milk?
Is a thing, yes.
I don't want anything to do with cockroaches or any byproducts of cockroaches. Me and cockroaches are separate forever, for eternity. I don't want to be anywhere near them. I don't want them anywhere near me. And I don't want any of their products. And I don't want them to touch any of my products. We're separate. There's enough room on this earth for both of us.
That sounds absolutely awful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That really sounds like the worst thing.
Didn't you used to do the Would You Rather game at school a lot? Like, that was a big
that.
Thing.
I still hate it.
It's awful. We don't have to do that. We're old now. I never liked that game because it was always such a poisonous mind trick. It was like forcing you to think about bad things.
It's so ridiculous, too. It's like
I have the worst
one. Would you rathers are both terrible, right? They're both things that you never do.
Do you want to hear the worst one?
I want to hear the worst one?
I think
no,
Tom
I
told
don't.
Me this one. It's right. It is the worst one.
Oh, God, really?
Yes.
Is this like the aristocrats joke?
No, no. It's not scatological. It's just
Would you rather? Would you rather? Either French kiss Hitler or Jeffrey Dahmer? Which one is better for you to French kiss?
This is way worse.
Right.
Just that's horrible. It's going to be horrible. I'm bracing myself.
No, actually, I'm not sure if it's... I don't know. I mean, all right, I'll say it and you can judge for yourselves, all right?
Okay.
Would you rather you're innocent, but everyone thinks you're a paedophile, or you fuck a kid and get away with it?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my.
That
own.
Is the worst one.
That
you
is
have
fucking
to choose
awful.
One.
Jesus.
And when Tom told me that, that was the end of the conversation right there.
Yeah, I wouldn't even. There's no choice there. I would just say, just kill me.
Right.
That How has my life gotten to the point where I'm even having this conversation?
That's what Sips always goes to. It goes to that third option, which is always...
There's no third option.
There always is. There has to be.
There's
just
never... What do you mean? It's a would you rather. It's one of two things. And I mean, I would just choose the... Like Sips said, I think death is the only solution in that situation. But that was the one he told me that we were doing this in the pub, like doing the would you rathers. And he was like, right, I've got the best one.
This does sound like a pub conversation.
Of course,
right
it's
now.
A pub conversation.
Not a good pub conversation either.
You guys are too
chaste.
This
is one of
the
ones. This is one of those conversations where like, oh fuck, I just remembered my rhinoceros is on fire at home. I got to run home and extinguish him ASAP. Bye. And then you run away, right?
Like this is why you guys don't come to the pub when we go out, because You're a couple of innocent young boys.
This is like Ratty prepared. And the Nonce all over again. Have you guys seen Afterlife yet? That show, the Ricky Gervais show?
Yeah,
Afterlife?
I saw the first series. What's the second? There's a second series?
There's a second season. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Hey, people have been
but the psychologist, the psychologist starts to slowly break down. You know, the one that's seeing the brother-in-law and was seeing Ricky Gervais as well.
No.
He's the guy from that. Game of Thrones. Remember the...
Dennis Pennis, that guy.
In season two he starts to slowly break down, like he's, you know, questioning whether he wants to be a psychologist anymore and sort of does like a reversal on them, you know, like Ricky Gervais' character leaves altogether. He's just like, he has enough. But then the brother-in-law continues to see him and he just gets worse and worse and worse, and he starts telling these two friends, Ratty and the Nonce, and their sexual exploits off the back of going to the pub and stuff like that. What you're describing is sounds a little bit like that without all of the fucking toilet stall blowjobs and fucking everything else that they describe. It's really funny, though. God. You got to check out season two. It's really good, right. Actually.
Because I was surprised how good season one, or series one, because it's an English show, so it's series.
Yeah.
It's worth talking about this, because Ricky Gervais has this sort of aura around him of, I almost don't want to watch stuff that he's in on principle. In the same way.
Why on principle, though? Like, I just thought... I just thought all of his shows would be like The Office, because I'd never really bothered to watch anything. I just thought, oh, I bet you it's just always the same. It's always awkward. It's always like whatever. And if you're up for that, cool. If not, whatever. Like, I never really sought his other stuff out. But now that I've watched extras and Afterlife and stuff, I've got like a newfound appreciation.
I'd like to think that I was fairly open to these things, right? But what happened to me last week, because I was reading this Alistair Reynolds book, which I finished, called Revenger, and there's a couple of sequels. Well, I think one's still coming out, but it's more it's a really fun sci-fi book, sort of set in the future where the solar system has kind of gone through these series periods of like being destroyed and civilization's regrown about 12 times.
Yeah,
and
extinction events.
Yeah, kind of like aliens coming in and
like
killing everyone.
Is that about the sixth EE?
Loads of extinction events have happened.
And extinction
where
entities
humanity
as well?
Is sort of hung on by a thread.
Right, right.
And so the civilization that's sort of risen up is fairly basic, sort of similar to kind of our current era, only they've got these sort of ships and they go out and try and find this sort of ancient technology in these hidden like baubles. So it's kind of like a pirate themed sci-fi in the future. I was about halfway through it when I was reading about something about it online, or someone mentioned something and they said it was like a young adult novel, and it instantly made me realize that yes, it was, in the same way that, you know, in the same way that it wasn't, you know, but I mean the line between young adult and adult novels is kind of a bit blurry anyway, right? Like there's people getting killed left, right and center, there's people having sex, there's all sorts of stuff going on, you know. It's pretty horrible, a lot of
it. Some of these young adult novels, the authors are like, they want to make it seem slightly edgy so that the young adults reading it feel like they're not reading a young adult novel, they're reading an actual novel. So they kind of put some edgelord stuff in to be like, and then so-and-so was killed. And it's like, oh, wow, this is so dark. Like Twilight was basically for kids, wasn't it? Harry Potter was definitely
for kids. Yeah, it was a young adult.
Kids.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it wasn't for kids.
What, Harry
I mean,
Potter?
Harry Potter was definitely...
It was for kids.
Harry Potter was it skewed younger.
It was for kids.
Late earlier in the episodes.
It was for kids.
It wasn't for... Well, it depends what you mean by kids.
I mean children.
But definitely, we've been through this.
The size of the typing in the books is conspicuously large. Normally that happens in kids' books too.
Anyway, as soon as I sort of heard it was a young adult novel, it kind of instantly changed my feelings about it. And then I had to work a little bit in my head to like say, actually, I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was really fun. I had a really good time reading it. It was kind of like this sort of just a space romp. I mean, I'd recommend it to you guys, absolutely. But I think that, you know, you may now be put off by the fact that it's kind of this, it skews a little bit younger on the read. Do you know what I mean? Because it feels like we automatically want to read adult novels or something, or be, you know, I don't know. We're
the opposite. I don't want to read any novels.
That's not the opposite. No, that's the third option.
Right. Okay. Man, I don't know what happened to me with reading. Like, I used to read a lot, and now I'm just so lazy.
I'll tell
just
you
don't
what
bother.
Happened. We don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, we definitely said before, when I have to travel, that's when I read.
Yeah.
Like if you I'm going away on vacation reading. Or something,
all
I'll
you
read.
Need to do is find something that is good, and then you'll read all of it. Like what happened with bloody Red Rising,
right?
You know, which is again kind of a young adult actually.
It does, it does feel a bit like that, especially the first book. The second and third book, not quite so much, but the first book,
it matures.
It did
a bit,
feel
definitely.
A little, like you said, a little bit young adulty. In parts, but I think that was because I associated it with the Hunger Games, because the sort of basic premise of the book is that they go to this sort of game area and they have to compete with other groups and everything. And I, you know,
for sure.
So it but it isn't. I mean, Red
or
Rising
Maze
is not
Runner,
like,
or some of these other things, right. or even. I mean, I don't want to say The Walking Dead, because that is definitely very, you know, adult themed. But sometimes it feels like. If you wanted to write a book, right, but you didn't want to put graphic rape scenes in there,
right.
Suddenly your book's a young adult book, and I feel like that's the wrong attitude to
have.
I
don't think that's what makes it a young adult book. I think it's to do with things like the vocabulary in the book. I think it's generally is the protagonist a young teenager with a lot to prove, and you know, it's like if the peers of the main character are also very young. You feel like I, as an adult, just think like, well, this book is for kids because it's like they talk like kids. They relate to each other like kids. They're kids. And there's not many grown up books that you read. I mean, Enid Blyton's famous five books were for kids, and the people in it were all kids. So it's hard for me to read a book where the main characters are literally children without thinking, well, this book is for that age group. Whereas I think when you read books as an adult, it tends to be about adults in adult situations rather than anything else.
That makes more sense to me. Yeah, actually, that does sound right. it's funny, isn't it?
Name any like books that you've read recently where the main characters were teenagers.
Yeah, Red Rising felt like it was kind of like a teen novel, but it was very good at the same time. You know.
Yeah, but it also moved on from that. It's like it started off with their life as essentially as young teenagers, young adults trying to make it in this crazy universe and trying to find their rank and work with these houses and everything. And then it expanded and they grew up and they matured and the books did with them sort of thing.
Where's the line though? Like where's the line, like the clear line between sort of teen or young adult fiction and then full adult fiction? Like,
well, I think actually what ends up happening is that someone writes something or creates something with a tone that they want to have, and then it ends up finding its niche in that thing, much like everything, like Minecraft or Fortnite, you know, were designed with a audience in mind, and then they skewed a lot younger based on who was playing them and who got the most joy out of them and who felt, you know, it felt more appropriate to them.
So here is the boundary between children's, young adult, and adult fiction. Now, this is my favorite line. I'm not going to read the whole thing from Wikipedia, but I think this is really funny. The distinctions among children's literature, young adult literature, and adult literature have historically been flexible and loosely defined. This line is often policed by adults who feel strongly about the border.
literally oh
grown
God.
Up saying, that's young adult fiction! That's us! That's us right
it's,
now!
It's literally oh, us, no. This whole conversation in a nutshell.
What a withering line on Wikipedia. That is, someone's put that in there because they might have put it in there as a reference to the Triforce podcast. Who knows? Because of my claiming that Harry Potter is a kid's book, even though
this is a claim that persists on this podcast, but is always denied by one member of this podcast, like an animal snarling and frothing at the mouth every time we bring it up. But I think you're right. I think it was originally marketed for children.
I mean, they were like, it was in the news when adults were seen reading it on trains and things. Because I can remember being on the underground and seeing all these people in suits off to work reading Harry Potter. And it was like, wow, they're reading a kid's book. This thing's really blown up and become hugely successful. But yeah, there's no doubt that it was a kid's book. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I don't think she even like originally thought because the first one's quite different to the others as well. You know, certainly she had to almost go back on some of the things. Oh, I saw a thing this week where a guy took the first Harry Potter movie and replaced... CGI replaced all the wands with guns.
Nice.
And it's fucking amazing because you don't realize how often they use their wands as guns, effectively, to blow stuff up or smash things or break glass or do things that guns would do.
That's amazing.
And it almost entirely fits, but there's occasional bits where Hermione's floating a feather with a gun. But there's this great bit where she just... So she says, "I'm sorry about this, Neville." She raises her gun and just shoots him in the head. And it's obviously the bit where... This is the bit where she freezes him into whatever, freezes his body. But he just sort of falls over like he's been shot in the head. And it's glorious.
What was his name? Neville?
Neville, yeah, Neville.
That is a good British name, isn't it?
That is. You don't meet many Americans
We were talking about names yesterday because I was making... It's not even a joke. It's not even funny, but...
Someone with a bad name who's had a hard time
very
for his
British,
entire
though.
School
I think
career
you'd be,
because of it.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a Neville in
it's,
America.
It's kind of shaped his personality. There's very, very few Nevilles raised to the rank of head boy, you know, without...
Neville Chamberlain was the Prime Minister, lest we forget. But he was the shittest Prime Minister. I have in my head a piece of paper that means that Hitler's cocking us. He's cocking us right now. I brought this paper home.
Think of some names that you think are... Okay, sorry, back to what I was saying. When I get salty in video games, particularly if I'm playing sort of like midday, like around lunchtime, I blame the French. I always just say, it's got to be French kids that are spoiling my good games here. Competitive games... Tarkov, whatever. I always figure they're done school for the day and now they're sweating it up, killing me with their lightning fast reflexes and whatever.
French children.
French kids, yeah.
Are responsible for you losing at games.
Well, I mean, I know it's irrational.
Is that because they're ahead in the time zone?
My chat have picked up on this now. And every time I die or whatever, they're like, oh, it's probably some drunk French kid killing you or something. It just goes on and on and on. And then people come to the stream, they're like, why is this guy being so racist towards French people? And so I'm not actually. I don't hate French people.
Hate French children.
I just hate their kids for being better at video games than me. No, but so we got into a discussion. It was a nice discussion, actually. We were talking about names that fit very well with like a culture or a country or whatever. We started talking about American names. Like Hunter or Chip or Buddy or Llewellyn, like those really American names that you wouldn't find anywhere else, you know, like you
Chester.
And then we were talking about English names, you know, like Nigel and Neville, and like Bartholomew and Barnabas.
Yeah, Cuthbert.
Cuthbert.
Clive.
Yeah, these are names that you really wouldn't find much outside of Britain. And it's just interesting, isn't it? As global as we're becoming, there's still very, you know what I mean? Like like in India, there's definitely names, Indian names that you wouldn't get really outside of India unless the person like left India, moved somewhere else.
Yeah, but that's different.
Sort of thing.
I'd say
a very striking culture.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And also they have a different language, so their names will be matched.
Yeah.
I mean, you may as well say in China you're never going to get a Clive, are you? But it's like, well,
funnily enough,
not.
Though, we did a lot of work when I used to work at the bank.
Funny enough, there's actually 10 million Clives in China. You don't remember, it's weird, isn't it? It's actually really popular.
No, well, what they do is, when I used to work at HSBC,
it's named after one of the emperors. Emperor Clive.
You know what? It's cool. I didn't want to talk anyway.
Clive Dynasty?
It's fine.
I've got one of the vases.
Original Clive vase made by Nigel and Clive, the famous Chinese urn makers. By the way, I remember when I was in a TI one time and... I hang out with a wide range of people from all over the world. That's pretty much what it is. But I remember my friend Ken, who's Chinese-American, but he was brought up in China, and he's always pointing out to me that like the subtle racist things that you see, especially in older films about Chinese people and Chinese culture. And one of the funny things that he and another friend of mine who's Korean always references the gong, the sort of bong. And the moment you hear that noise, it's meant to represent China, right? So I was watching...
That's in everything as well, even today.
So I was watching a James Bond movie the other day, The Man with the Golden Gun, and every time that there was a Chinese person on screen, it was like, gong, just every time.
Oh my God.
It's something that, as a white English person, I had never even noticed this. I just thought it was like a movie trope.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you're right. Having a fucking gong sound every time your people come on screen.
Not even that old, that movie, like 20 years ago. Just like
The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, I'm thinking of GoldenEye. Sorry, 2000s. I'm thinking of GoldenEye.
That was made in the 90s. Man with the Golden Gun was made in the 70s, I think. Late 70s, very early 80s. I would say 79. Let's look it up. Man with the
Golden
Gun. 1974. How about
Bond
that?
Bond names and villains are great, aren't they? Because they're just so, they're not like at all exciting, eh? It's just like something stupid like the man with gardening gloves or, you know. It's just like, all right.
Well, his
but that was part of all the spy lingo and stuff. Yeah.
He was Scaramanga. That was the name of the bad guy. In Golden Man with the Golden Gun, Scaramanga. And then you had Blofeld, which, you know, just made me think of Blowjob. Now, that would have been a better bad guy, I think.
What about Oddjob?
Oddjob, you're thinking
Oddjob. Oddjob and Blofeld combined together to form Blowjob.
Man,
and,
I remember Oddjob being so fucking OP in GoldenEye, like because he was short and it was harder to aim and headshot him. Like
that was the power play.
Yeah, if anyone picked Oddjob, anyway, you were fucked.
What were you saying about names, Sips, Neville and Clive?
Oh, about China and names. When I was working at HSBC, we had a lot of our stuff was physically located in Hong Kong and therefore was supported by a team in Hong Kong, a really big team in Hong Kong.
Well, it's Hong Kong Shanghai Building Corporation.
So in the middle of the night, sometimes at like 4 a.m. or whatever, you'd get a call from Hong Kong to say that, like, you know, a batch job had failed or something went wrong, whatever.
We've lost a load of money. We can't find it.
Well, these are things that you had to deal with. So I'd have to wake up and I'd have to
There's too many people called Clive. They're all called Clive Wang. Well,
we've got a Clive Stack Overflow.
That's the point I'm getting at is they gave themselves Christian names because for some reason they decided that this would make it easier for us who were not in China to deal with them. You know, so they had names like Wendy and Clive and George and stuff like that. But they weren't their real names. They would just adopt these.
I mean, they still do that in call centers. In someone Christian will call names, up with a very strong.
Well, it's pretty unusual to open a bank account with a false name, though, right?
It is odd, though. I don't know why they should have to do that.
Because we're idiots. That's pretty much it.
It's just I was always perplexed by the whole thing. I just thought. I'm more than happy to call somebody by their actual name. They don't need to
but a lot of people
dress it up or whatever. It was just such a weird thing. But I remember going through like code that I'd have to debug, like old source code where people, you know, the person who would write the code in the first place, there was always a space at the top for you to put your name, what project you're working on, some sort of reference or whatever. And it was the same there too. And this went back like to the 70s when a lot of this stuff was written because it's on like an old mainframe. And there'd be just like guys called like, you know, Wendy Liu and like Johnny Wang and stuff like that. Like they would use
that there are very common names. I mean, I joked about Wang, but I think Wang Wei is like one of the most common names in the world.
Yeah. Sometimes they would put like in brackets their full actual name, but they would still use these sort of like Christian prefixes or whatever.
Well, if you've got like 300,000 people banking with you with the same name, how do you keep track of that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you want to hear the list of names? English names that you will not find a kid named these days. Now, this is funny because some of these, we know people with these names. I know people with these names.
Tarquin.
But I have... No, Angela.
Angela.
Do you know any babies called Angela?
Oh, you mean these are names that have gone out of fashion sort of
yes.
thing.
Yes. Bertram.
We had this discussion yesterday as well, because now a lot of new babies are being called like city names or like...
Right.
They're being called
not
like
Beverly,
Khaleesi
not
and
Cecil,
stuff like that.
Not Carol, not Clarence. Clive is on this list.
Yeah.
Cyril, Deborah, Diane, Donna, Dean.
Cyril. Now
Doris,
that's an English name. Holy
Dean,
crap.
Dean, yeah. Dennis, Derek, Duncan, apparently out of fashion. Poor Duncan.
Yeah.
Elaine, Ernest, Jeffrey, Horace. Now, Joanne. My sister's name Horace. Is Joanna. You don't meet many Joannas. Leonard, Maureen, Malcolm, Nigel, Neville. See, these are what we were right. Paula, Roy, Sally, Sandra, Sharon, Sheila, Tracy, Wendy, Yvonne, and Wayne.
Wayne.
Now, it's true. You don't meet many kids with those names now.
No.
It's weird. But Wayne Rooney is only in his 30s, but you don't meet Waynes these days.
That's
weird,
true,
you'd
yeah.
Think people, I mean, you'd think people would name babies after people who are fairly famous. You know, you think like Angela from The Office, there should be some Angelas, you know.
I mean, she wasn't exactly a character you want to name a kid
Wayne
after.
Rooney's an England footballer. I'm just surprised there's no... People are just not that into him, or they think he's a bit ugly or whatever.
I mean, maybe they don't want their... was a big one, right?
Dexter
a lot of people...
was a big one too. I remember when our kids were smaller and my wife was going to play groups, there was always a handful of Dexters, you know.
Crazy.
I think there's a lot to be said for like shows, popular media and stuff to influence like names.
I mean, there must be
too.
A bunch of Adeles, right? And
I'm
Sears
sure.
and
yeah.
stuff like that because of the singers.
Lady Gagas and fucking...
Yeah, a lot of Gagas.
Yeah.
A lot of Gagas. This is Gaga Stevenson.
So, interestingly, I had an email this week from a guy called Robin, who is having a baby in October.
Shout out to Robin.
Is Robin a baby?
And he said, I thought it would only be fitting to get him some sort of Yogscast merch, as we'll be naming him Lewis.
Wow.
Good right?
I my heart was like, oh my God, yeah. I don't think I'm ready for this. But fortunately, in the next sentence...
You're doing like a Michael from The Office, and you assume that you're going to be the godfather and stuff as well.
In the next sentence, he said, the name is in reference to my wife's grandfather, Lewis.
Oh, thank God.
I was like, oh, thank God. So it's okay. But I mean, that's the thing. Some people, there might be a baby Sips out there. Someone might want to call their kid Sips.
Well, God, good luck to them. Cause that's not a good setup for your future, is it? Like if that's your name, I mean, it's an anagram
P-flax.
For piss. So it's, you're not,
I mean, would you be, just think about being a kid called P-flax or Pyrian, you know, how would they get bullied in school if they were called Pyrian Flax?
Well, because people would say, what's that name about?
Yeah.
And they would have to say, well, my dad really liked this bald idiot. You'd be like, well, great. Lucky
Pyrian
you.
Pyrian Flax. Dirty slacks.
Fucking bald idiot lover. Stupid. Fucking idiot.
Yeah, I don't know. It's got, I guess like when you name your kid, it's such a minefield, right?
It
because
is.
you don't want to be constantly reminded of, you're paranoid that you don't want to be constantly reminded of something or something bad. You can't, you know, there's a lot of names that are just out because you know someone called that, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's what happens with baby names. It's like, first of all, I can't name it after a lot of already names out there because they're already taken. I don't want, you know, Ian, it's like, oh, it's like Ian McKellen. It's a bit weird. I don't want babies to be named after Gandalf, you know. And then like Patrick, oh, Patrick Stewart. Suddenly there's like, oh, you just name any name and it would conjure up images in your mind. And you have to find one that's neutral for both of you, I guess.
Okay, look, I've got a couple of good ones here for you. Some ideas. What gender of baby are you thinking of having, Lewis?
Oh, I'm thinking of, well, I'd like to have a neutral name. So then if I have a boy or a girl, you know,
just answer the fucking question. Just pick one. Flip a coin. If you
I
have
want a
to.
Gender neutral name. So when they grow up, they can choose their gender and they still keep the same name.
Okay. What about Booker?
That sounds great.
Like Booker T and the MGs.
No, you could definitely have a girl called Booker as well. Like that sounds like a young adult, the young adult star.
About Buckley? Cleveland?
Buckley?
Obsession. Buckley. That's a name for a sacrifice. What about the name sacrifice. These are all
wow.
These are all on.
Well,
a,
okay. Cleveland doesn't work because of the euphemism
right.
of the sex act, which no one has I don't think ever done, but it's very famous.
You don't see many Chevys around, do you?
No, you don't see many Chevys.
No, or Dwights. You don't see many Dwights around. Yeah.
Dwight's
either.
Not a cool name. It's like Dwayne.
Cromwell,
it's like a bit,
Creighton, Crawford, a bit Cortland, Copper, Cooper.
Cortland.
Yeah, these are all Bert. Buster? You don't see
Bert.
You don't see many Berts or Busters around anymore, do you?
This is Gru. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Gru.
Actually, I think you could have Dwight and Dwayne in like in the black community.
What about
I think
Gordon?
Like, that would be okay.
Haddon.
It
Hadley.
Seems like certain names definitely
yes.
feel like there's like certain groups that would fit fine. Gordon. Actually, Gordon's like I reckon some of these could come back round. I like
some
Gordon.
Of these are really old. Henley's an old one, isn't it? Kenton.
Henley. That sounds like a very That sounds like the royal baby.
Lawson.
You don't meet many Kens.
Legolas.
That's Legolas.
That's more of a that's probably a more recent one, right? Well, semi-recent.
What would you call him for short? Lego.
Lego.
Leggy. Yeah. Lassie.
What about Mace?
I don't
What about calling your kid Mace?
Mace.
Madison.
Mace.
Maitland. Madison is another one, right? That's a Madison is like a like an American girl's name. Madison.
Yeah, you hear a lot. Like, I know quite a few Madisons, and they just goes to Maddie, which right. is you know not uncommon.
Newman. Yeah. Nelson.
Newman.
Parker.
Newman.
Packard. Oh my God. Rally.
Newman and Parker are definitely dogs' names.
You don't see many Ralphs or Ramses around anymore either, do you?
Ramses.
Yeah. These are all.
I was at school with a kid
names.
Called Ramsey.
Yeah.
He was Egyptian. Like that was his parents were Egyptian. He moved over. His name was Ramsey. He was a good lad.
Maybe people end up picking the same names because they're safe and other people have picked them. And it's just gonna blend in and with be you know, people want someone relatable. You know, you want a prime minister called Chris or David,
Dave.
You know. You want someone who sounds
Gary.
Like they've got a kind
prime
of
minister
and yet we have a
name.
Boris. So
that's
there goes
incidentally,
that theory.
Changing the topic, I had a Boris burger yesterday.
Right.
Which I'm calling it that. I don't know if
it's Is that where they give you
that.
Half the money off?
Yeah. So I went out with Ben for lunch. I was like, do you want to go out for lunch? And I was like, I hear they have half price food. And he was like, sure. So we went out to this burger place nearby. And so we get there and there's not very many people out in there, but there's a few people outside. And so I looked sort of over people's shoulders, sort of keeping my distance. You know, everyone's all very paranoid. And there's a QR code at the door and it says you have to scan the QR code to get in the queue. So I was like, okay. So I scanned the QR code and I had to type in a load of all my details. This is for the track and trace thing so they can contact me if anyone at the restaurant had Corona.
Yeah.
So then I got a queue with Ben and we were there for about 5 minutes and they called out the name like a doctor's surgery. Ben and Lewis! I was like, oh, geez. So we went in and they put us in a booth which had little plastic... they've stuck like plastic sheets to the backs of the booths.
Right.
So they're more isolated for some reason. And then the waitress honestly stood 2 meters away from us as if we both had corona.
Yeah.
She was so scared of us and she looked miserable.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
she looked like she did not want to be there at all.
Even without corona, would you want to do that job? I mean, that sucks.
No, I probably wouldn't. But she was not, and she just said, menus on that QR code. I was like, she pointed to this QR code sellotape to the table. So scan that QR code, had to order, so looked at the menu on my phone, had to order digitally, which I'm all fine with, and pay digitally as well, by the way, at the end. So it was entirely, like, completely no touching at all. Brought a burger really nice, just sort of very gingerly pushed it over to the table to keep distance. It was very carefully done.
They could serve the food with those big... flat things they used to get pizzas out of pizza ovens.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Shuffle your plate at you like...
Yeah.
And so it was all very careful, very, 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 very futuristic, it felt.
I mean, if they don't do this, then the government's going to shut them down again. Like all these places, I think there is a collective
trying.
Understanding.
So I've got apps for Gourmet Burger Kitchen because you get occasional vouchers, and I've got apps for fucking everything, it feels like already. And it feels like they've been trying to... Every restaurant has been trying to make me pay... digitally or sign up digitally to their fucking newsletter or something anyway,
yeah.
right? So now it's just finally all of that infrastructure is actually slightly useful.
What do you guys think about this whole you know push to get people to use money digitally, like, you know, cards, like contactless.
I mean, I will actually say,
like,
I kind of didn't hate it because there was no calling the waiter or waiting for them to bring us a menu or waiting for them to come and take our order. You could just do it all online, and it felt like it was just, I don't know, I kind of liked it, actually.
Yeah.
I will say. I didn't have to really interact with the servers, and they didn't have to interact with me. You know, no one wants to interact with me.
Well, I mean,
saves.
I don't know. I think phasing out cash is not a great thing. I think it'll be a shame.
Why?
It's finally phased out. I don't know, because there's like a lot of little things about paying with cash, right? Like that privacy is one of them. When you're paying with a card, like somebody somewhere knows where you've been, what you've bought, what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, at least with cash, you can remain a bit private.
Right.
You know,
there is something about cash, right? In the same way that playing a board game on Tabletop Sim and rolling the dice digitally feels incredibly unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Whereas playing poker in real life and actually having the cards and moving the chips around and rolling the dice or doing, like, you know, it's such a big difference. It's poker online versus, you know, in person. And I think having cash and paying for stuff in cash certly with coins, you know, or with notes is a lot more, I don't know, it feels different.
Yeah, there's like, definitely, you know, some interaction that takes place that we need to have some interaction with other people. And I think exchanging money for goods, even though it's not as quick as using a card or whatever, makes you interact with somebody a bit longer, even if it's not even a meaningful interaction or whatever. It's still something, right?
If you're not touching them physically, you're touching them with the disease vector of a piece of paper or piece of metal.
Yeah,
I mean, it's way easier. I mean, if you're a business, here's the thing: there are some businesses where they can't afford to have the fees that are charged for cards and things like that. If we can move past having those stupid fees,
also,
how is it not easier to have now you've got money, rather than what you have to do is go to the bank with all this cash.
You're not...
which is a pain in the ass.
The banks aren't like... I mean, they're a fairly sure thing, but in a pinch, without cash, you have no way of having money or owning money that's like out of the banking system, right? Like,
what do you think cash is? If there's a massive financial crisis, your cash is worth fuck all. Like, you may as well say, let's trade with blocks of gold.
Yeah, but
I mean, if you're skeptical about whether banks are going to survive, you also have to be skeptical about whether cash is worth keeping.
I know, but at least you have that. And if you needed it or if it was worth something, you had the option. Whereas everything being digital, you're completely just saying, I'm just going to give everything to this company that is just going to do whatever it likes, as they've proven time and time again in the past, like with all their dealings and stuff like that. I don't know. I think it's a lot to...
You're completely right.
I think it's a lot to lump in.
He's not. Here's the thing. The money that you have in a bank account is also stored digitally. So there's no difference. Unless you're saying that you constantly want to have,
if you had
all the money that you own in a pile...
I'm not saying all the money. I'm saying, what if you had like 500 quid stored in a shoebox under your bed, just in case, sort of thing? You can't do that, right? If like we can completely eliminate...
No. Cash. What you want in that shoebox is a bottle of whiskey... Yeah. Two guns, yeah. Some ammo.
You need bottle caps.
Some cigarettes.
I don't know, man.
You've got to think about prison.
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm sure that you can discount everything I'm saying with some fact or whatever. I'm just saying it feels bad that eventually
we will not have cash.
Like,
well, there's a thing, isn't there? Like when you go into banks now, it's been there for a couple of years. Well, maybe even since the original financial crisis. It says that the bank will insure your deposits up to the government will insure your deposits up to 35,000.
Yeah, exactly. So
like, if you don't have, if you have more than £35,000 in the bank, which most
yeah,
people
well
don't,
look at when look at all the Northern Rock stuff when that happened, people lost a ton of money. Like, there was people that had money above the amount that they would guarantee back for you it just disappeared, like, overnight, you know, like life savings and stuff.
Well, I think that one bank going bad, because it's been mismanaged or some sort of fraud or something, that does happen. Like, there was this fraud with Wirecard, wasn't there, relatively recently, with this payment processor who said they had a lot more money than they had, but people didn't bank with them. I think one bank going bad can be obviously a big problem. And I think, you know, that's why the government would step in. But I think that in the case of some sort of financial meltdown, more of a risk of massive inflation or massive deflation, yeah. some sort of big financial problem. Yeah, I think it is scary that your money could be at risk. And I don't know what the answer is.
I think it's £85,000.
I think it's less than that, actually.
Well, according to this, the financial services compensation
scheme, yeah.
The government would top up any compensation over and above the standard £85,000.
Right.
The bank was nationalised. That was the whole
point.
I don't
really know what that means.
It means that the government stepped in and guaranteed all the money on the assumption that they would then be able to resell the bank and get the debt repaid.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Which they did.
I'm not really familiar with
that. I'm not super familiar with it either, but I think...
I think maybe that's why it's scary, because we're ignorant and we don't... And the fear of the unknown. We don't know... If the financial world feels like this incredibly complicated, cryptic, mysterious, like, scary thing that could, you know, go boom at any time and all our money in the banks is all, you know... It's like even like Mary Poppins, there's been a run on the bank kind of, the bank's not got enough deposits, quick.
I don't mind the bank, but at the same time, you know, well, like a lot of these banks are just companies just doing, you know, like they're regulated and stuff, sure. But ultimately, you know, they're just as likely to screw up or fail as anything else, right? And when you think like how much you depend on storing money in there and maybe not all of it is even covered, it's sometimes it's a little bit worrying, isn't it? You know, like
I think that what's interesting though is how we've reacted to the virus and how we've adapted and how we've made put into practice sort of these processes that allow us to carry on through it.
Yeah,
and obviously, but to varying levels of effect.
Another worrying aspect of that, like the coronavirus, is a good example. When you think of like the distribution, the logistics of goods and stuff, I mean, you know, like Amazon, Walmart, all of these big companies that were able to dispatch things to you that you ordered from your house, sort of thing, were like a lifeline for a lot of people, right? Like you wouldn't have been able to get around it. But yeah, you know, these are private companies that could just do whatever the fuck they want. You know, like it's not like the government had much to do with that or whatever. You know what I mean? Like so what happens if?
Well, there is banking regulation. The problem is that sometimes it, depending on who's in power, it ebbs and flows in terms of how restrictive it is. And the problem with 2008 was that they lessened the capital reserves that banks had to have. They allowed them to trade things that they previously weren't allowed to trade. And that was one of the things that exacerbated the 2008 crash, was lack of government oversight. And because essentially you're right that these are just companies trying to make money. Banks are not some kind of institution that owes you anything.
No, but
they just provide a service in exchange for which they want to make a shitload of money. And they do. The banks make an awful lot of money.
But it is a thing.
But there are regulations. It's not some unregulated cowboy minefield, or it shouldn't be. The problem is that sometimes those regulations are relaxed in an effort by some government 10 years previously to say, hey, let's relax things because then it'll lead to more money and good times.
Yeah.
And it does in the short term, but eventually it always blows up.
It's one of those things that I think the common perception is that they are these, you know, like if you never thought about a bank and you just, your wages went in there and you drew money out when you needed it or whatever, you would just assume that it's really safe. Everything's covered. Nothing could ever go wrong or whatever. I feel like if more people just thought about some of this stuff a bit more, they would have a different take on things. Things wouldn't be done so fluidly and easily, like by banks and by governments and stuff, right? Like I think a lot of people just don't think about a lot of things, and so a lot of things just sort of like slip through the cracks, right? Because
the problem is as soon as you start thinking about something, you realize how little you know, and then it scares you, and you really have to do beyond that. You have to start educating yourself.
Yeah.
But it's so hard and so obfuscated and so confusing, the whole world and how all of it works, and it's this mind-boggling mess that you don't understand, you know. And so it can be very threatening. I think that when it comes down to it at the very end, though, a lot of people are in the same boat. You know, a lot of people have, you know, a job where they kind of just about get through the day. They put a little bit away in savings. You know, they're at some stage of paying off their mortgage.
Yeah.
Most people are in a very similar boat. And if everything were to start collapsing, as we've seen with coronavirus, people not being able to, you know, losing their jobs or not being able to pay their rent, you know, that suddenly can lead to this slippery slope of problems. You know, if people can't pay their rent, then the landlords can't pay their mortgage, then the banks don't, will have to, they'll start defaulting to the banks who have to repossess their houses. And it leads to this slippery slope of problems. And I think when you, that's destabilizing, and that is what causes this breakdown. And so that's why we've seen, I think, the stimulus package in America and things like this, in order to try and, you know, fend off those those temporary issues, you know. And I think they're important, and I think that we don't know what's going to happen in the future with businesses going wrong, and we are in a capitalist society of boom and bust, and there is boom and there is bust, and we are going to have this downturn, and we don't know what the impact of it will be. And I think everyone has a different idea. The sandwich shop around the corner has shut down. People aren't coming into the office anymore.
The sandwich shop up towards the main road. Sandwich is closed down.
Yeah, it's closed down.
What, permanently?
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, it's the first casualty,
Just think of how you feel if that was your fucking bank that just decided to shut down. I mean, you sound like that's a big blow to you. It's a fucking sandwich shop. Imagine how you'd feel if it was something important.
Do you know what it takes for a bank to go bust? You know how rare it is? They get bailouts from the government because the government understands that if the banks all go bust, all of this goes bust.
Mm.
Everything. There's so few banks that have ever gone belly up. They're big names because of it. Bear Stearns, right? Mm-hmm. Northern Rock. We all know these names because it's super rare. Because first of all, they're very good at not going bust, apparently, and the government is very good at bailing them out. So the idea that the banks are all going to fucking go bust, they'd be the last thing to go bust.
Well,
sandwich shops. It's your Just Chips. It's those places that are going to go under.
It's those weird places on the high street that only sell hats. And you're like, how are you still in business anyway?
Well, now they're not, because a shop opened just when coronavirus was starting. A shop opened near us that's a pottery cafe.
I feel so sorry for certain shops like that.
Which is a sketchy business anyway, because how often do you need
pottery?
Well,
because I talked about it. We went and filmed a thing in a pottery cafe, didn't we? And it was great. We had a great time. But it was very social. And I think they need a really decent throughput of people. I think that's why Sandwich closed, because they made most of their money in that lunch rush.
Yeah.
And that lunch rush doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And it's certainly not allowed to have a rush, you know, anywhere. Because everyone has to be QR coded in through the door one by one.
I wonder if they offered takeaway or like delivery. The problem is it's not easy to get the system in place to start delivering food. And if people aren't going into work anyway, they're going to be ordering less food. Last week we were talking about this, and I was saying that a lot of these businesses, if we change the way we work and the way we commute and travel and congregate in offices and things, if we change that a lot of businesses would have to adapt. And someone pointed out that they're a bartender in a bar and they rely on people after work coming into the bar, or someone else runs a live music venue and they rely on weekends when people come in for live music and spend money in the bar. And if that goes, how does that get replaced?
Well, I think that's the beautiful thing about the economy, is that it provides opportunity for people who build a new, interesting, sustainable, good business to fit the needs of what people want. Sure, it'll get out with the old. That's a shame. But, you know, it is adapt or die. That's how humanity and natural selection has functioned for billions of years. Oh, well, millions of years. It's certainly this amazing, you know, we live in a free market economy and people are still going to want to buy food and go out and do things and socialize and find things.
But
do you think
this kind of thing will lead less to small businesses being able to succeed in those areas and it'll just be big businesses?
I think if you look at Amazon,
for example, delivering stuff.
Yeah.
They're delivering a shitload of stuff. They've pretty much, everybody's just using Amazon. Like if you want to buy something, you get it on Amazon. Like there's no rival to that. And when it comes to getting food delivered, there are at the moment a bunch of different places offering food delivery. Like there's Deliveroo, there's Just Eat, there's Uber Eats. Like I'm sure there's more.
I feel like Amazon is, though, at the point where it's the infrastructure, though. It's the roads, right? It doesn't matter. You know, it's like comparing Amazon to other delivery companies, like comparing trains or roads. You know, you're going to use the roads. You're going to use Amazon. But Amazon has a million different suppliers.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and all those businesses use Amazon to get stuff to you. Amazon aren't mass manufacturing
right,
different things that they sell. And so in the same way as Deliveroo or Just Eat, you know, there's a couple of food services, but it's those little restaurants that are doing it, you know, the falafel place and the and there's constantly new ones opening up and they're constantly providing new ideas for people. And I think that, you know, if you're good and you provide a good service, then
so here's my question: use it. Is that if we move to a delivery only system, is that going to change where people buy the food from? Because if you're a new place, you're not going to have all those reviews. You're not going to be top of the search results on Deliveroo or whatever. If you're a new restaurant offering takeaway, how do you get that word of mouth out there to people that it's good? Because if you have people, when they go out for lunch or they go out for dinner, often they'll just wander around and go into somewhere they like the look of. And they'll be like, oh, we tried that new noodle place down on so-and-so street. It's really good.
Yeah.
And then that word of mouth gets out there. So if you take that out of the equation and people no longer wander around, how do those small businesses get their names out there to become?
Oh, it's bizarre though, PFLAX. It's almost like that whole thing with the orchestra. So when they were trialing, I've probably talked about this on Triforce, but I read this whole thing about how when they recruited new violin players for the orchestra, they would almost always choose men. And when they saw them, but then when they started trialing them behind a screen and listening to them, it would become much more like fair, and they'd end up choosing an equal amount of men and women or whatever. They were biased by what they saw. And I think it's the same thing with restaurants. Like if you're ordering stuff off Deliveroo, all you need to have is like a nice frontispiece on a nice menu.
Right.
And people will judge you on how good the food is. Sometimes, you know, the best food is from this really dingy, dirty looking place down a back alley that you would never want to go normally. But once you actually, but the mum and pop food kind of things that they cook there is really nice. I'm sure it can go the other way too. And you could be tricked into having a nice frontispiece on Deliveroo and it's just horrible.
But I think even on places like Deliveroo and stuff, I think like the sort of approach to food is that people are willing to try different stuff, right? Like
I hope so.
Like if you're on like a delivery app and you can see menus and stuff, which most of them allow you to, you might be like, ah, you know what? I had like this yesterday or I had that last week or whatever. I want to try something different. Like I think there's probably like a bit more of like people like a will to try out different things.
People going
like
out
that.
Of their comfort zone.
It works the same way as in person.
Also,
I guess
you do see the reviews, right? Like you see the reviews online, like food was really good, bit cold or whatever, you know, and you sort of, you can pick and choose from those comments. My favorite are the comments that are really, really angry. And then there's a response and a response to that response. And there's a whole thread you can follow where the owner and this customer are going back and forth at each other.
I love finding those things.
Yeah, there's a subreddit where they collect them all, where someone comes in and says, the business did this, that, and the other. And the business is like, don't lie. You know, we remember you. And it's like this whole story comes out. And I was like, wow. So these little dramas are just recorded.
Well,
for all time.
I mean, that's the thing, though, that a bad review can change people's minds. Like, and we talked about this before as well.
Chips,
you know, I'll look at a game on Steam.
Lewis did
I'll scroll
just
down
chips.
And there's all these good reviews.
Yeah, don't you?
And then
I always
look,
sort by negative. I want to see what the
I look
the
for the bad
like
ones,
yeah.
And then I look for something to put me off. And it's like it's such a bad way to do it. But that's
thing.
Just how psychology works, right?
Like I don't want to hear from the people who say this is fantastic, because I want to see the people that complaining. If their complaint sounds like bullshit, I'm like, okay, it's probably all right, and this person's just a twat. But if I read their argument, I'm like, oh, that makes sense actually. Then I will agree with it. Like, I feel like a good negative review is so powerful in switching me off from a business. Whereas one that just goes, it sucks, I was like, well, I don't care. Like, I'm going to ignore that one. Just like I'm going to ignore the ones that say, fantastic, !! Smiley
Sometimes
face.
A bad negative review is what I want, though, in a sense. Like, I always want every review to be a negative review saying, here's what's wrong with this game. But if you like XCOM, then you'll probably, you could probably overlook it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I tell you what I did this week. I played a game called Other Side, which was billed to me as the XCOM Tactics Game of the Year.
Right.
Okay? Wow.
And it's
who by
it's
who
really,
though?
It's called Other Side.
No,
like,
who
like
built
Sir
this
Suicide
as the XCOM Tactics Game of the Year?
I think it was PC Gamer or someone like
right,
that.
Right. Okay. Right.
So it was like someone decent,
yeah,
who's actually still in business, just about maybe. And it had like 9 out of 10 IGN, 8.5 out of 10 PlayStation Universe or whatever. So I was like, okay. And also, I remember meeting the dev at GDC or somewhere last year, and I played a little demo of it, and I quite liked it. And so the idea is that you have these kind of really hot, sexy women fighting ghosts and zombies and like really creepy. It's all black and white and red. And it's all just, the whole thing is black and white and red, really thematically, really a cool art style. And you have these, and it's quite high level tactics too. So I played the first mission. I quite enjoyed it.
That's Other mission. Side with a C in place of
other
an
side
S, by
with
the way.
A C. So, yes. Yeah, like suicide.
Yeah.
Right.
Or homicide.
Or fratricide. My favorite.
Yes, my favorite. And so what, I'll tell you a little story. So I was on the second level, and I had there was a enemy spawned, and he had 1,174 health, and I was like, okay. And my attack did 863 damage, right?
Right.
But he had 64 armor, so I had to minus. So I got a calculator out. I was like, okay, 843 minus 64. Equals 776. So I then minus that off his health, which was 1,100, however much, and I ended up with like 450 something. So I was like, okay, cool. So I then I looked at my other unit, and he did 480 damage. So I was like, oh, cool. So what I can do is I can do both of these attacks. Then they'll leave him on, and I did the minuses, and I was like, okay, look, I'll leave him on minus 26 health. So that'll definitely kill him. So I was like, okay, so let's do it. So I did it. And then I realized I'd forgotten to
adjust for armor for the second attack.
Exactly. I'd forgot to take into account that. But also I'd forgot to take into account that he had a buff on him that was 5% damage reduction, but I had a buff that was 10% damage increase.
Oof.
So I was like, oh, so suddenly I was playing this game with a fucking calculator for a start, which is a bit of a problem. And the second thing, I was having to constantly do all these stupid maths. And I got it wrong. I made a mistake. It didn't let me reload. So I auto-fooled. And I haven't played it since.
Goodness.
But
can I just say, I didn't want to get back to the poop talk that we did last week, but I really, really need a poop.
Oh, shit.
Wow, yeah.
Okay,
it's about that time, isn't it? It's,
yeah. Sorry.
So is there any chance that we could wrap it up this week? Apologies, listeners.
Yes. I just wanted to tell you that story.
No, that's cool. I wanted to
wait
it out.
We got to wrap it up so that Flax can wrap one around the inside of the bowl, if you know what I mean.
That's the most unpleasant thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's gross, isn't it?
And on that bombshell, we bid you adieu.
Well, we'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for listening. See you later. Bye.
Bye.